Morpheus. Yet the deliverer of the East was indigent and feeble. Of the Persian spoils, the most valuable portion had been expended in the war, distributed to the soldiers, or buried by an unlucky tempest in the waves of the Euxine. The conscience of the emperor was oppressed by the obligation of restoring the wealth of the clergy, which he had borrowed for their own defence. A perpetual fund was required to satisfy these inexorable creditors. The provinces, already wasted by the arms and avarice of the Persians, were compelled to a second payment of the same taxes. And the arrears of a simple citizen, the treasurer of Damascus, were commuted to a fine of 100,000 pieces of gold. The loss of 200,000 soldiers who had fallen by the sword was of less fatal importance than the decay of arts, agriculture, and population in this long and destructive war. And although a victorious army had been formed under the standard of Heraclius, the unnatural effort appears to have exhausted rather than exercised their strength. While the emperor triumphed at Constantinople or Jerusalem, an obscure town on the confines of Syria was pillaged by the Saracens, and they cut in pieces some troops who advanced to its relief. An ordinary and trifling occurrence, had it not been the prelude of a mighty revolution. These robbers were the apostles of Muhammad. Their fanatic valour had emerged from the desert, and in the last 8 years of his reign, Heraclius lost to the Arabs the same provinces which he had rescued from the Persians. I have now deduced from Trajan to Constantine, from Constantine to Heraclius, the regular series of the Roman emperors, and faithfully exposed the prosperous and adverse fortunes of their reigns. 5 centuries of the decline and fall of the empire have already elapsed. But a period of more than 800 years still separates me from the term of my labours, the taking of Constantinople by the Turks. Should I persevere in the same course? Should I observe the same measure? A prolix and slender thread would be spun through many a volume, nor would the patient reader find an adequate reward of instruction or amusement. At every step, as we sink deeper in the decline and fall of the Eastern Empire, the annals of each succeeding reign would impose a more ungrateful and melancholy task. These annals must continue to repeat a tedious and uniform tale of weakness and misery. The natural connection of causes and events would be broken by frequent and hasty transitions, and a minute accumulation of circumstances must destroy the light and effect of those general pictures which compose the use and ornament of a remote history. From the time of Heraclius, the Byzantine theatre is contracted and darkened. The line of empire, which had been defined by the laws of Justinian and the arms of Belisarius, recedes on all sides from our view. The Roman name, the proper subject of our inquiries, is reduced to a narrow corner of Europe, to the lonely suburbs of Constantinople. And the fate of the Greek empire has been compared to that of the Rhine, which loses itself in the sands, before its waters can mingle with the ocean. The scale of dominion is diminished to our view by the distance of time and place, nor is the loss of external splendour compensated by the nobler gifts of virtue and genius. In the last moments of her decay, Constantinople was doubtless more opulent and populous than Athens at her most flourishing era, when a scanty sum of 6,000 talents, or £1,200,000, was possessed by 21,000 male citizens of an adult age. But each of these citizens was a free man, who dared to assert the liberty of his thoughts, words, and actions, whose person and property were guarded by equal law, and who exercised his independent vote in the government of the Republic. Their numbers seem to be multiplied by the strong and various discriminations of character. Under the shield of freedom, on the wings of emulation and vanity, each Athenian aspired to the level of the national dignity. From this commanding eminence, some chosen spirits soared beyond the reach of a vulgar eye, and the chances of superior merit in a great and populous kingdom, as they are proved by experience, would excuse the computation of imaginary millions. The territories of Athens, Sparta, and their allies do not exceed a moderate province of France or England. But after the trophies of Salamis and Plataea,